Today's episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company that lets you choose from over 1,500 licensed therapists.
That's right. You do not have to get out of your bed to talk to somebody who can get you through the day. Go to Talkspace.com/WOT as a special offer for all of our listeners.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Obviously, we're basking in the afterglow of our amazing Rockefeller Records Celebration podcast that we put out last week. If you guys have not listened to it, it's 2 hours of gems and amazing stories, a lot of nostalgia and so many laughs. Go check that out. It's on SoundCloud, iTunes, wherever you guys listen to this podcast. So, Jeff, about 2 years ago, a year and a half, something like that, we did a whole bunch of ads on this podcast.
For some ride-sharing company, we'll call it.
Yeah, listen, we're not doing ads for them now, so we're not going to give them any shine. But, you know, they wanted us to sort of honestly say what it would be like to be a driver for said company.
Now, we are not drivers ourselves for that company.
No.
But we decided...
You haven't even driven in a long time.
No.
So you're definitely not rideshare driving for them.
I have a license.
Yes, this is true. And your license, by the way, your picture is?
Me as a 16-year-old, so it's hard to use when I go on planes. I have to use my passport. But, so we decided, okay, we can't honestly talk about what it's like to be a driver for this rideshare company, but... maybe we can talk to the drivers.
So one night, we were picked up by a driver from the service, and his name?
King Larry.
One word.
One word, no apostrophe, no spaces. King Larry. Yeah.
And we're like, well, you're awesome to begin with, because you have an awesome first name.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were like, well, what's it like to be a driver for this company, and what are your hours like, and how'd you get involved, and what do you like outside of this? And great dude.
Yeah, by the way, it was like a real conversation. It wasn't like we were interrogating
him. No. Also, we did not work for the ride.
Hey, man, is like that your real name or something? You know.
This was awesome. Great dude. His name was King Larry. So, fast forward 2 years, and we got a notification on Twitter from a guy named Cole Murphy, at Fantasticole, and Cole goes... yo, I rode with King Larry yesterday and told him he's famous. You have a new listener, and he put a picture of the guy's driver's license. Shout out to King Larry. If you're listening right now, hit us up on Twitter or Instagram or somehow get in touch with us. Or, you know, come around. You know where we live. Pick us up and let's go for a ride.
Do you think he still has our address?
That I don't know. But if King, you know how Mom and Aunt Jane have a driver when they want to go to the airport, like a specific guy?
Yeah, Mr. Roman.
Mr. Roman. Mr. Roman picks up Mom and Aunt Jane to go to the airport if they're going like to Maine or North Carolina or whatever. If we're traveling somewhere and we want to go to the airport, I want King Larry to be like our guy.
I want King Larry to be more than just a driver. Like I want King Larry to be our turtle.
King Larry should be part of our entourage.
Yes.
It's us, and it's Mayo, and it's Shin, and Dan.
If King Larry can bring us, like, a Saigon,
oh.
If King Larry can, like, like, I wonder if right. King Larry's, like, really into shoes.
Yeah, I love this idea. You think he really listens?
Oh, yeah!
Some business to take care of before we get into this episode. Our album Teddy Bear Fresh is available on all streaming services. Go check out Sugar High featuring Currency and Smoke Dizza. It is featured on our Spotify page. Look for It's the Real, no apostrophe, no spaces.
We got more live shows coming up in some different cities. We also are selling t-shirts at itsthereal.com/shop. We have some large and extra large t-shirts for sale. Go get those. Today in the podcast, we have our friend Rocky Marciano, who people may know from being in the Kendrick Lamar video for DNA.
Yeah, he's the one with the sandals, and he's eating breakfast with Kendrick.
Right. He's very recognizable. He looks like the dude from The Big Lebowski.
That's right.
His favorite movie, your favorite movie.
Yeah, and we get into that today. We also talk about how he went from fashion to working in the music business and working on projects with, obviously, TDE, working with producers, working with Wale, and going from consulting for Columbia to Atlanta. Atlantic to Def Jam to Interscope, and he's a really inspiring guy, a really great dude.
Huh.
And when do you want to get into it?
Right now.
Yo, what up, it's Eric, a.k.a. Smoke a Bowl, a.k.a. I Don't Roll on Shabbos.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Take All the Coke, a.k.a. You're the Mean Joe Green.
Yo, what up, it's Brock motherfucking Marciano, you're the Mean Man. Yeah.
This is a waste of time, but this is the real. Bow, 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 bow,
bow, bow, bow, bow.
Brock, what's happening?
Chilling.
Yo, we're so happy to finally have you here.
Shit, I know. We've been working on this for like a year, I think.
Yo, Cardo got wings. I was talking to him, and I was like, yeah, Rocky's like been supposed to come over like here
forever.
Like, yeah. And has been flaking. He was like, I'm going to call him right now.
He never called me, by the way.
Yeah, well.
It was probably about something else.
That's probably right. But you're a West Coast guy. Welcome to the Upper West Side.
Oh, shit.
How are you?
I'm great.
You've been on a hell of a run.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think you deserve a vacation, so it's nice.
Yeah,
that,
that was like, honestly, I was starting to get to a point where I just mentally everything just seemed like it was just squeezing my brain, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I hadn't like had a time to like not think.
The last time, and I don't know if this was officially the last vacation you had, but the last time I can remember you looking like you had a vacation, you and our mutual friend Hip Hop.
Yes.
And
Schoolboy Q.
Yeah. And a bunch of other people.
Yes.
We're on the ocean.
Yes.
And it was a lot of yelling, you're to mean.
There was a lot of you're to mean on that ocean. You know what I mean? It was a whole lot of you're to mean. A whole lot of tequila.
Yep. It looked awesome.
A lot of Wagyu beef. A lot of, you know, sea scallops and shit like that. It was dope.
Does Wagyu beef help when you're trying to not be seasick?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
100%.
Did anybody get
seasick? I think it's the fat content, the marbleization of it. You know what I mean? It just makes it just, you know, it's kind of like Dramamine.
That's right, yeah. Dramamine.
Dramamine.
You're officially now an A&R at Interscope Records.
Yeah, VP of A&R at Interscope. Yeah, shout outs to everybody over there.
How has that been?
It's great.
Are you making friends?
No, not at all. No, I'm just kidding. No, everybody's great, man. You know, it's kind of like my first time really being inside of a building.
Yeah.
Like getting my taxes taken out of my check.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So every month I weep, you know, when I get paid.
You have to work with an HR department now.
Yeah, you know, I can't do certain things. I can't, you know, never mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Bad joke. Amidst all of the, you know, political bullshit going on. No, but it's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. I'm learning a lot. You know, there's so many facets to this business, and I've been on the other side of the fence for so long, so I figured I'd go and mix it up and see what I can do.
But, you know, it is the West Coast label.
Yes.
You're a West Coast guy. Where are you originally from?
I was born in Santa Barbara, oddly enough.
Yeah.
Avocados?
Yeah.
Avocados.
Yeah.
Actually, I used to live in Carpinteria for a bit, and there's actually an avocado festival.
Whoa. Does that mean you love avocados or hate them?
I love avocados. I didn't used to. I used to actually hate them. We grew up pretty poor, so I remember we had an avocado tree, and my mom like used to try to make me eat them all the time, and she'd just eat them with crackers.
Like trying to feed you cigarettes.
Like, yo, I'm hungry, and she'd be like, yo, go get an avocado, and I'm like, fucking avocado, man. Like, I do not want an avocado, I want like a slice of pizza, but
yeah.
Or a Lunchable or something,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
And how long did you stay down there?
I was there through high school. My dad moved around when I was young, so I would fly to Dallas every summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he moved to San Francisco and Los Angeles. So I was actually supposed to transfer to Fairfax High School and while I was in high school, but I just, you know, I had a good baseball team where I was at, and I just was like, yo, I'm not trying to leave like in the middle of high school and make new friends. And
well, what position were you?
I was a pitcher.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And did you have any good pitches?
I was actually really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, you know, the whole college baseball thing wasn't really my thing.
So, oh, okay, so you got a scholarship to go.
Yeah, well, I had initially signed to go to Northridge, and then right after I graduated, they lost their program to Title IX, which only happened for a year, I guess. And then I ended up choosing to go to San Diego State because it was the only other school. I got accepted, and I was like, oh, I got to stay in Southern California. I wasn't really trying to move, and it was like a spur-of-the-moment thing. I didn't really have time to figure it out. So I transferred there. Long story short, just didn't work out for me down there.
So Southern California guy, when do you learn to surf?
You know, I was a beach kid, you know, my whole life, like younger, you know, and I stopped probably when I stopped, you know, doing water sports when I was like 7 or 8 to pursue team sports.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't pick it back up again until I moved back to L.A. from New York.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
I was going to make a water sports joke about our current political, you know.
But, he's on a working vacation.
Yeah.
At his golf course.
Yeah. It's because, nice that he takes a break.
You know,
to go take
a
break.
Yeah, you know, everyone needs, you know, 2.5 weeks in the middle of political turmoil.
Oh, yeah.
To go ahead and, you know, swing golf club around.
Or not. Just like, you know, hang out at the country club.
Yeah, just chill. You know, order. Yeah. I heard they have a great grilled cheese.
Yeah. And also, you know, State Secrets.
So when you went to college and, you know, baseball was your dream.
Yes.
Did you see, like, even bigger things? Were you like, I'm going to play minor league baseball?
You know, coming from a small place, I kind of realized, like, when I didn't go to a school that, like, I had, like, visited and recruited and whatnot, like, mm-hmm.
It was pretty much over. And I was interested in, like, weed and chicks and, you know, hip-hop.
That was not part of the scholarship?
That was, there wasn't a class for that one. I had to figure that on my own time, you know what I mean? That was an extracurricular activity.
Sure.
Yeah, and I grew, you know, my mom was really strict growing up. You know, I was the first child, so.
Yeah.
She was super strict, obviously, being a single mother.
You have
two brothers.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. One is 3 years younger than I, and then the other one is 18, which he'll be moving here in like 2 weeks, actually.
Whoa,
he's going to Fordham Lincoln Center.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. He, you know, he's a DJing right now. He makes beats. He's pretty lit.
That's dope.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you go off to college, did you have a major in mind? Did you have, like,
I'm going to keep it so real because I know my dad and, you know, my parents will listen to this and shit. Like, I literally faked my way through college. I didn't even go to school. Like,
whatsoever.
I literally, like, after, like, the
Wait,
first...
Wait, you want your parents to hear this?
No, they knew. They knew. Like, yeah. There was, like, one day the jig was up. You know what I'm saying? It was like, oh, shit, no. The college sent a letter. And I was like, oh, your son hasn't gone to school in, like, 3 years. And I'm, like, making fake report cards and whatnot.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It was lit.
But you were putting the work in to,
yeah,
like,
I
fake
was,
it.
Yeah, I was... Oh, yeah. Like, I was going through a faking... I was majored in faking.
Yeah, yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Yeah. And then one day, like, it came to a head. And it was like, yo, you got me.
Well, I mean, did you have a job at that point?
Kind of. You know what it was? I started doing, like, street team.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine, Kevin Delaney, and I used to have... He used to work for LRG.
Mm-hmm.
We had a radio show in college. And so we did that, and then we were part of a street team, and, like, you know, for Columbia. So that was when I kind of was like, fuck, I could figure out a way to get into, like, you know, rap. I wouldn't have to go to school. Who needs an education for that? You know what
I'm saying? Well, who were some of the artists that you're running around, like, promoting?
It was, like, Badass, 50 Cent's Power to Dollar album that never came out.
Yeah, yeah.
On Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And then the street team actually folded into something else, and it was like, basically, LRG had started using all of the guys that were in our street team to do, like, promote their brand. Like, Jonas, you know, they had all these college campus, you know, representatives. And I was like, you know, I'm kind of cool on that. I wanted to be more a part of the music. So eventually all my friends from college got really good jobs at LRG, and they started making bank or whatnot. And I was like, okay, I got to figure out a way to at least make $100,000 a year in my lifetime. So I went and I started PAing in Los Angeles on film sets.
Wow.
You know, and, you know, for you know, a 20-year-old kid at the time, you know, to be making $200 a day, I was like, shit, you know, this isn't bad. You know what I mean? It was more than my mom ever made, you know what I mean? So,
well, what kind of hours were those?
Oh, undefinable hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was
yeah.
manual labor for yeah. sure. 5 a.m. on set. You know, you don't know when you're coming home.
Right.
Your girl wants to break up with you. She's like, when are you coming home? And you're like, yo, I don't fucking know. Relax. Like,
yeah, I'm hanging out outside
the
Desi and Lucy.
You know what I'm saying? Like, whenever the martini shot is,
yeah.
I'll be home like 3 hours from then because I got to drop off everything. And
oh, man.
But it was great because it kind of gave me the work ethic I've had today. Like, you know, it's just like, you know, keep your mouth shut and keep your ears open. Whatever you think needs to happen, be there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Go stand around. You know, just get involved. You know, just help. Just do something. Pick something up.
And
take
who,
it somewhere.
Who did you stand near on a film set?
I gravitated really? Towards the art department.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of cool. Eventually I became a swing.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, that was kind of like my, you know, I was like, okay, I can't do this manual labor for the rest of my life. This wasn't glamorous enough for me. You know what I mean?
Where were you living?
I was living on Ogden Street between, Beverly and Oakwood, like in now what is known as like the Fairfax area.
Mm-hmm.
So hip.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so this was pre-hip.
Yeah.
This was very Jewish.
Yeah.
Almost no restaurants. There was Damiano's. There was one bar, and there was about 20 Jewish antique shops.
Sounds super lit.
Yeah. It was so lit. The shopping was incredible. But the Grove had just gone up over there, and that was kind of like where the gentrification of that area started.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But I was paying. I had this huge apartment. We were paying $1,200 for. I split it with a guy that also worked in the, you know, movie and film business.
And you had your own car?
Yes.
So
it was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mostly drove my girlfriend's car at the time.
Okay.
I
was like, did she know about it?
Yeah, she did.
Okay. Oh, maybe that's why she was calling. Like, yeah. You know? Yeah.
Where's my car?
Yeah. She was like, okay, what time are you going to be home? I have a life too, dick. You know what I mean?
So no college grad, no degree?
No degree. I did have a high school. I did graduate high school. Sure. Yeah, I did the work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did. I went.
This is for your parents.
Yes. Yeah. This was, well, you know what it was? Is I went to, like, you know, I was really into sports and I'm a fairly intelligent dude. I got good grades, you know, and I was, my tests were good. So I always went to private schools that my mom couldn't afford because I got scholarships. But the problem with those private schools is they take attendance. So you can't actually wiggle around. You know what I'm saying? Like, I used to, the only way I could would like be able to get off campus in high school is I'd have to have my mom write a note that I needed to be able to go get lunch, or I'd have an orthodontist appointment. I'd be able to go like off campus and get lunch. And I was like, you know what I mean? But, you know, other than that, it was so structured that I never got a chance to like fuck up as a youngster. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it was one of those things where if you didn't go to school for 4 or 5 classes a day, you couldn't go to practice. And ultimately that was like everything.
Yeah. Four or five classes a day?
Yeah. You know, like you like, so what I used to do was, I have my mom, and she was super cool at the time because, you know, I got my stuff done. So it was like, so I used to have, what I used to do is I would have her call in sick for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would show up like right after third period, like right before lunch. You know what I'm saying? So I had enough time at school that day to be able to go to practice.
Yeah, I'm just shocked that they have schools in California. Like, this, yeah. This is such a good. Such like a different lifestyle.
Shout
than,
out
like,
to your mom though.
Yeah.
She, but she couldn't have been shocked that you like failed out of college.
I mean, I kept it more real with my mom than I did with my dad at that time. You know what I mean? Like, my mom and I are super tight, and you know, my dad was a very discerning one and wanted me to like really like, you know, have an opportunity, and you know, none of them really went to school and did anything like that. So, you know, it was important for them. But yeah, you know, it worked out.
Your friends are working for LRG.
Yeah.
Does that mean that you then had a job for LRG?
No, that was the thing. Is I was like, I ain't doing that. You know what I'm saying? And then obviously, like, you know, LRG blows up. You know, all my friends are working there. And I'm like, oh, okay, I fucked up on that one.
So what's the move after that?
You know, I was working at an agency. I went to an agency after I became a swing. Because I figured that was a little more glamorous, right?
You're wearing a suit.
No. I was wearing like...
It's still California.
Yeah, it's still California. I was wearing like Lacoste's.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I still had to swag a little bit. Like, yeah. I couldn't like be like, you know, I love putting on a suit every once in a while, but on a daily basis, I couldn't do it.
No.
So I went to a below-the-line agency. I was repping directors of photography and production designers and whatnot. Really good ones, actually. And I kind of gravitated, obviously, towards the music video department.
Sure.
Music. You know, I was always, like, knew what was tight, what was next. So I would help the guy who was really the head of the music department, like, be like, yo, you got to, you know, like, we got to get after this video, and we got to put this director with this video, because I think that they would, you know. So I kind of added a creative element to it. Then I met Kron, Don, Phil to Agony, Mitchie Slick. Through mutual friends of mine. I was also making t-shirts on the side, and they started buying them, you know what I'm saying, and then wanted me to make custom ones for them, and you know, then it just became hanging out, you know, and Chase Infinite, who manages Rocky. You know, a big mentor of mine got
He still rapping then, or?
Of course.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Well, and that was the funny thing is because I used to buy DJ Shiite tapes on Melrose. Chase always had freestyles on there. So I was thinking back in the day, like, that Chase was self-scientific.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, because he would always say that. But, you know, it's obviously him and DJ Khalil.
Mm-hmm.
When we met, and then he found out that I actually liked his music, he was bugging out. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. So, like, he and I, you know, created a bond. And, you know, those guys are really responsible for me learning, like, the ins and outs of the business. And actually giving me a chance. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, no one had to do that. Like, you know, they saw something in me that I didn't even know that I had in myself, you know?
Well, and did you recognize that you had good taste?
I always knew I had good taste. Like, that was something I always, you know, in high school, I always had dope clothes because I worked at Foot Locker. I got, like, the most unattainable fucking job, you know, for a town like Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
To be able to work at Foot Locker, that means, like, every athlete, like, anyone you played basketball with, everybody came through because that was the only, you know, they didn't have, you know, online shopping and, you know, shit like that. You had to go get the shoes. If you missed out, you missed out. Like, that was it. Like, you weren't getting them.
So you had the referee jersey.
Wore it every day.
Yeah.
See, and then that's what you should,
I used to get in trouble with my baseball coach because I would have to go to work some days. So I would have to figure out a way to finesse work and baseball practice, you know. And luckily, I was a pitcher, so
it was only every few days.
Well, yeah, like they, you know, by the time my junior, and I was good,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So like they didn't really fuck with me too much, but it was like, yeah, I would go to practice, I would do my, I would run, I'd do batting practice, I'd throw a bullpen, and I was out.
And the funny thing in high school, like usually the best athlete is the pitcher. So at that age, you're not just, you know, pitching, you're pitching, and you're probably like a really good hitter too.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, you know, I hit like 400.
Pretty good.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, but see, they didn't let me hit all the time. You know what I'm saying? Because I only, because I couldn't, you know, I pitched. So they it was just, it was one of those things. Like I wish I would have been able to hit more, but you know.
Well, how do you do now if you went to a batting cage?
I did it not too long ago. Yeah, me and Schoolboy Q about to start doing that. About to start going to the batting cage. He played baseball too.
What's up with him like being fit now?
You know, he's an athlete. He was fit when I met him. You know what I'm saying? It's just, you know.
No, but now he's, like, actually fit.
Yeah. Well, no, he's fat fit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's fat fit.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's still got to have the goo-wop. But, you know, it's kind of part of the lexicon of Schoolboy Q at this
right.
point.
He's not, like, an R&B singer yet.
No, but, he's not performing. Right. Stuff, yeah.
So,
like, something about rappers and buffness, that shit just doesn't go together. Right. Like, you got to have, you know, either be slender or you gotta be like, you know, kind of chubby,
right? Like when Waka did Summer Jam here and his gut was just like going all over the stage, like,
yeah,
like
that's fire.
That's,
you know,
a rapper.
Saying?
Yeah,
like that's like, I don't give a fuck, you know what
right.
I mean? If you're fit and you go to, you work out every day, like what kind of vices can you possibly have? Like sex, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah,
too
everybody's
much water.
Got that,
right.
Everybody's got that vice, right?
Not like, relatable. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I feel like, you know, when rappers get buff, their careers go down, you know what I mean?
Okay, so now you get into, you're not just hanging out with these guys, you're actually managing, right?
Yeah, I mean, eventually. It took a while and a lot of process and you know, yeah, I started managing them. And then, you know, I think the biggest shift in you know, my career at that time was my introduction to Dilated Peoples through this Dilated Strong Arm Steady Tape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I kind of was like, oh, we get Terry Kennedy to host it. I met Terry Kennedy, you know, and he was just like this wild, dope dude at the time, pro skater, super funny and super outgoing, you know. And I was always the first one to the studio, and evidence was always there. So it'd be me and Ev in the studio waiting for everyone to show up. But I would have folders of, you know, beats that I downloaded from, like, Sycamore tapes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, instrumentals. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Sycamore.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I would scour for, you know, freestyle. This is, like, the freestyle tapes, right? So, like, everyone was rapping over other people's beats. So, you know, I'd show up, and I'd go through all these beats with Ev. And you know, like, he was rapping on shit that he would never rap on at the time through doing that tape, you know? And that was kind of, like, where my journey, I think, as an A&R started, because he was like, oh, like, you, like, you know, you like really know like how to, you know, pick beats and like tell people what to do on, you know, this type of stuff and vocal coaching and whatnot. So yeah, that and then like meeting Alchemist and becoming really good with Evan Al, you know, kind of helped solidify the fact that I was actually going to be doing this at some point in time.
So, I mean, you're a West Coast guy, but your ear is not necessarily just West Coast.
No, I was like the one kid that listened to East Coast music throughout growing up. Like, I was always more, as much as I love West Coast stuff, you know, I can't front like I didn't. Dog Pound, you know, Selly Cell,
yeah.
Like, you know, these type of guys. I love West Coast music. But I always gravitated more towards the East Coast sound. And to like wittier, dark lyrics. And I think it was more because, you know, we didn't see that at the time. You know what I'm saying? Like, there wasn't a, you know, at that point in time, like, you know, I would have to watch the box to get like Survival of the Fittest videos and like those type of things. So to me, it was just super intriguing. And I think I kind of just gravitated more towards that because it was a little bit like darker, grittier. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the samples, you know, the samples were more jazz based and just, you know, they kind of just, you know, I don't know what it is. There's more ear candy for me.
I mean, it's so much harder to do that than to just like listen to whatever's on the radio at that time too.
Yeah, you know, the radio is like, you know, especially if you didn't grow up in a metropolitan city, like the radio was whack. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. What were your musical influences from like your parents? Like, what were they listening to?
My mom would like listen to like Madonna and the Eagles and Tina Turner, Jackson Brown, What else did my mom like? Fleetwood Mac, you know, like stuff like that. Like, you know, and my dad listened to a lot of Genesis, Don Henley, you know, obviously the Eagles.
Yep.
Yeah. One of his favorites is Jackson Brown, Jimi Hendrix. You know, both my parents, they played guitar. Not professionally or anything.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But they just played, you know. And then I had an uncle who, at the time I was born, was in high school. My dad's younger brother.
Mm-hmm.
And he introduced me, basically, like, he was the kid on the fucking couch, you know, was an athlete, but all he did was watch MTV.
Yeah.
So I got introduced to Def Leppard, just everything that was on MTV at the time, like, all the videos. Like, I would watch, you know, in heavy metal, like Metallica. And then I lived in an apartment complex as well, and I was the only white kid in the apartment complex. So when I would go back home, it would be, like, Run DMC. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Cool Moe D,
yeah.
Just everything from 85 and on, you know, LL Cool J. So I just had like this wide variety of music that I was just, you know, listening to, you know, and you had to exchange shit with people back then because it wasn't like, you know, we had a, you know, a plethora or a, you know, Spotify or Apple Music that just has everything on it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, now we had to like literally barter, like, okay, you get the what tape are you going to take? Okay, cool. Cool Moe D for Def Leppard. I want that back in 2 days.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So.
Were you also going to like live shows? Because, I mean, LA.
Not at that time. Like, I did start going to, when I went to college. When I got high school and college, I started going to shows like every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had a car. We would drive up. Six of us would all pitch in on gas to get to L.A. We'd buy a bullshit sack of weed. You know, we'd be smoking on the way there. And then, you know, we'd haul ass back like at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Fighting sleep down to San Diego to get back to class, you know. And that was like some of the dopest times because Unity was going on then in L.A., so, you know, Bigger B, you know, God bless the dead,
mm-hmm.
Who happens to be Chase's cousin.
Really?
Which, you know, I didn't know at the time when I was going to the shows because I didn't know Chase like that. But,
right.
You know, Unity was a huge deal in L.A.
Sure.
And was basically responsible for bringing all the shit that I really liked, all the East Coast acts, Wu-Tang, all that stuff, to L.A. You know, I went to the Black Star album release show.
Whoa.
Yeah. It was crazy. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, I remember, you know, hanging out with Justin Pierce. A lot, you know, in L.A. We became cool via going to these shows at Unity, you know, and then I had heard of his passing a few years later, which was terribly sad. But, yeah, Unity was like a special time and place in L.A., you know, and you know, all the shows were just amazing.
So by the time that you're in the studio regularly,
yeah,
is your family still like, who are you and what are you doing?
My dad was basically like, bro, like, you left the fucking – well, so first I quit the agency to go work with Strong Arm Steady. Right. So then he was just like, yo, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, you know, you can do whatever you want. I'll still love you, but, you know, don't ask me for shit. At the time, basically, I was sleeping in my car.
Really?
Yeah, I had an Impala that I had bought from working, which I was mad behind on the payments on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wasn't making any money at the time. Yeah.
But you're like a tall drink of water, by the way.
Yeah.
So, like, to sleep in a car.
An Impala's pretty big, but, yeah, I would sit in the front seat, and I would lower my seat all the way down. So what I used to do was I would park in neighborhoods close to my dad's house or my mom's house. So sometimes I'd drive back to Santa Barbara, and I'd just park in front of my mom's house because my stepdad and I didn't get along. So mm-hmm. he was like, you can't come back to the house. And my dad was like, you can't sleep here. So I would leave the studio sometimes like at 3 or 4 in the morning. I would park my car in like down the street from my dad's house. And then I would get up like before everyone got up and I'd drive to the gym and I'd shower at the gym.
Man.
And then I'd go back, you know, into L.A. to Steady House, you know, and do my thing. Well, I mean, I also spent nights on their couch too, but.
And how are you ducking the guys who were looking for their payments too? For the
Oh, man. You know, they were calling my pop's house crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, eventually, I think my dad figured out a way to. Actually, no, you know what? No, I think I got that car towed.
Oh, my God.
And I left it in there. Yeah. That car got towed one day, and I just couldn't get it out. You know what I'm saying? So I just left it in there.
Meanwhile, you're going to the studio, and what do you know about Xzibit at that point? Like, what was he like?
Well, he was one of my favorite rappers prior to meeting him. You know, like his first album. I saw Xzibit perform at UC Santa Barbara with Sadat X.
Wow.
Helter Skelter, Field of Agony, and Rascas.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was like during the paparazzi days. So Xzibit, his first two albums to me like were some of my favorite albums at the time, you know. So that was big for me. I was like, oh shit. Like, you know, if nothing else, like I got to meet like someone I really like fucked with. And yeah, he's a funny guy, super charismatic, you know what I'm saying? Loves weapons, you know what I mean?
That's such like a you were slowly building and then you just like threw it in.
Yeah, you know, just like you know, he's like, you know, I'm off the top of the head right here, freestyling. Yeah. So yeah, I mean to me that was just like I was like a kid, bro. I was just like wide open and ready to just, you know, to do whatever. Like I just thought this was the life.
Well, also with all these guys, are you one of those people who are like, yo, I like these guys because they're underground? Or were you like, I really want to make you guys popular?
I kind of was both. You know what I'm saying? Like I always looked at things like from, I guess lack of a better term, a 3M perspective. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like, you know, 3M is like, oh, we don't actually make anything, we just make it better,
right? Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, well that's gonna be kind of like what I do.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, you know, before I even knew what I was gonna do, you know, I was like, I always had ideas, you know, and I was like, oh, only if this person could just do this, or only if, you know. So yeah, I mean, I always had the confidence on my taste level to say, hey, you know, like this is dope, but this could be much bigger, you know? And a lot of that is naivete, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to kind of maintain that, like, in anything that you do, and feel like that you being, you coming to the table and sitting down makes the table better,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I always just kind of had that, so.
At this point, the table you're sitting at is a bunch of guys who are LA rappers and are underground,
all underground rappers at the
indie
time.
Indie guys,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, 100%.
So how do you then get into repping them officially?
One day they just asked me. They were like Kron, you know, Kron and I have a great relationship. Like that's like a big brother of mine. You know, we talk about things. You know, he's got, you know, multidisciplinary music taste, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, we could talk about heavy metal, we could talk about a bunch of stuff, you know. And yeah, we would just spend nights talking and hanging out and shit, you know. And I guess they all kind of saw that, like, yeah, I came from an administrative background, you know. I was at an agency, so it wasn't
you were Lacoste,
exactly. I had a polo shirt on, you know what I mean?
They looked at you and
I had a polo
like,
shirt on with seven jeans and Air Force Ones, and you're like, oh, he could walk in anywhere, you know what I'm saying?
He makes any table better.
So you know, it was just one of those things. I was like, I was determined, you know, I would have done anything. So at that point, it's just like, fuck it, man, you know, give it a shot. They had gone through a bunch of people that, you know, were managers or weren't managers or their homies or whatever, but it for some reason never worked out. And at least like they knew for me, like they were going to get someone who was eager and they could help dictate what was going on. Like they don't have someone telling them, oh, you can't do that or you can't do that. Me, I'm like, anything they say, we're going to try to make happen. I'm sending fucking emails to Mike Caron. He doesn't know who the fuck I am. To Tom Wally at Warner.
Yeah.
I was able to get into like this email list. And so I had everybody's email. And at the time I was just emailing people. I never got a response, but it was like the same thing I did when I was working in music videos. Like there was this guy, Earl Sebastian, who actually somehow he had Cody Chestnut's Headphone Masterpiece demo.
Whoa.
So I had those songs right before. So I was like, this guy's an amazing director. And he actually was the director that shot the Fugees video, the Killing Me Softly video.
Oh, wow.
But not the one that we see.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's the one that they're watching on the movie screen.
Oh, crazy. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really a dance hall thing.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I guess the bullet was, you know, basically the bullet comes out of the gun and it's going through this whole scenario.
Right.
And so, like Killing the Sound Boy.
I think you're thinking of the Korn video.
That's different. No, you know, again, like, so.
I get you're a heavy metal guy.
Yeah. So. My drive from there basically started, like, I would call Irv Gotti's answering machine because I knew he directed videos. So I would call Def Jam and I'd try to get all these guys answering machines so I could get these reels to them, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of just took that approach and emailing everybody for music, like, you know, whether it was Strong Arm Steady, whether it was Evidence, all that type of stuff. So
I'm also guessing that, like, if people said no, you were like on to the next one.
Well, yeah, no one even responded. Oh. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it was one of those like lessons I learned. Like, yo, like these guys don't, you know, they don't have time to talk to you.
They don't want to join your Yahoo Fantasy Football League.
Bro, yeah, you know, we wear different types of polos. You know what I'm saying?
So how long did that last?
You know, I managed evidence till about 2010.
Oh, that's
so that was like, you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was like, you know, and I still, you know, those are like friends, you know,
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like we talk all the time and, you know, they're all super supportive of everything I do. Which
totally.
Is dope.
So how do you get into the fashion side officially?
That was also part of what I kind of helped with. Everybody was like, oh, you need to be wearing this shit. Like, you guys are still trying to get Echo. Like, fuck Echo. You know what I'm saying? And you need to get in, like, you know, skateboarding is crazy right now. Skateboarding fashion is the shit. So I'm like looking at streetwear and I'm like, this is the shit you need to be wearing. Like, this is cutting edge. This is non-conformist. This comes from a real place. And it's fly. You know what I'm saying? So that was that, like, you know, I met Nick.
Mm-hmm.
And, Nick and I became cool, and, you know, Nick loves rap. You know what I'm saying? If anybody knows Nick, he loves music, he loves hip-hop, and, you know, he loves celebrities wearing his clothes.
Sure.
So my whole thing was like, look, dude, like, just give me clothes, I'll get these people in it. Kind of became fast friends with the whole Fairfax scene, Ben and everybody, you know. I'm not like one of those dudes that just says, oh, I'm going to get shit, and I'm wearing it myself. Like, you know, I give it to them first.
Yeah.
Whatever was left, I'd take, you know.
Mm.
So that whole scene was, you know, picking up at the time, and it was kind of like, you know, the perfect storm.
Right.
And
how long did you wait on the Supreme line?
I never waited in a Supreme line in my life. Thank God. And, you know, so at that time, Supreme wasn't even popping.
Right.
You know?
So what was popping on, besides Cantor's Deli? Like, what was on Fairfax?
That was it.
Yeah.
It was Cantor's. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, Supreme was there, and I think the Hundreds were the second one,
mm-hmm.
and then Diamond was the third one.
Right.
And then from there, the scene kind of exploded. But, you know, I had started officially working with Diamond in 2009,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, Nick almost lost a brand at the time as he was dealing with distribution problems.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a big risk and said, fuck it, I'm doing this myself, you know, which was, you know, no one really knew what they were doing at that point in time, you know, so... yeah, we started, you know, we just kind of started doing marketing. You know, Chase had put together a proposal for him and I to do marketing at Diamond, and we started doing it. And, you know, I just kind of started running with it. Like, I just was like, yo, I gotta get it on everybody.
Yeah.
Because to me, I thought it was the hottest shit at the time. And so I'm like, it's not hard to sell stuff when it's dope as fuck.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But so, by the way, like, you did get it on everybody.
Yeah, I did.
Like, everybody.
Yeah. Everybody.
Yeah.
Like, who was the one that, like, sort of tipped, you know, the whole scale?
Currency and Wiz.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, for sure. They were the hottest shit popping at that time. And, you know, I think we were on it. I mean, Currency, huge streetwear fan. He was on everything before, you know, it blew up.
Right.
100%. And he was friends with Terry. Really tight with Terry.
Mm-hmm.
When Terry was trying to rap and all that type of stuff, so... That was kind of the infancy stages of that relationship. And yeah, it kind of just took off from there, you know, like, yeah, it just, you know, and I was like selling it. I was like, yo, you know, I would just hit everybody up. Like, yo, let me send you a package of clothes. You
yeah.
know? Also, I got beats, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
well,
it was
I noticed that you didn't bring any 2009 era Diamond stuff for us today.
I didn't, you know, yeah. That's actually my fault.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Huge fuck up.
Yeah. Huge.
Now, do you remember the first time that we ever met?
Guys, after I smoke a lot of weed.
First time we ever met was in the Record Plant BET Awards weekend with The Business.
Oh, shit.
So this is 2010 or 11.
Chasing Cash was in there. I remember Chasing
a lot
Cash,
of people,
Money Making Matt.
So
there was a lot of people in that
section. There were a lot of people. So it was Krayshawn's album. They were there to...
yeah, who was she signed to?
She was Columbia.
Signed to Columbia. Columbia.
I had just started at Columbia as a consultant.
So, yeah. So, Columbia, you know, rented out the place for like a month.
Yes.
And those guys were there, and they were like, we want to laugh, so come through. And and so we did.
And they had like a basketball hoop that was set up in the live room.
In the live room.
So, yeah. You guys are funny.
Yeah. You know,
okay. Debatable.
Okay. Yeah. Just checking.
Yeah. So, but like, we saw like a bunch of people there. There was Busta Rhymes.
Nori was there.
Splitstar. We had a 30-minute conversation where Splitstar like yelled about global warming. Like, yeah. Very controversial views about global warming. And we also opened
clearly
the door.
Global warming is a falsehood. So.
Oh yeah. Right. Well, I'm glad that you're able to spread that on our podcast. But we opened a door because like the business was like leading us around the whole mm-hmm. place, and he was like, "Here's who's
well, yeah,
here."
Dow, like, Dow for the business. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
It was like
great guy.
Nori's like in this room, whatever. And we opened up a door, and it was a dark room, completely dark. There was no furniture, nothing. And we opened the door, and Lil Mama is standing in this empty room.
We're like, oh.
And then we closed the door. Like, it was so weird. It was the weirdest thing. Yeah.
But anyway. And then Ashanti and her mom came, like, at 3 in the morning. Oh. Anyway, you were there.
Yeah.
You were working for Diamond, and we were just like, nice to meet you, and, you know, good luck with whatever you do.
Yeah. So
you were,
fuck off.
At the same time, you were with Columbia.
Yes.
Were you involved with the Krayshawn project?
No, my friend Harley can take all the credit for that signing.
Okay.
Harley Wertheimer. Great dude.
Yeah.
And I think anyone at the time, like, that was a must sign, I think. You know, like, everyone was after that.
That
you know
single
like
was you, just everywhere.
Yeah, you know, it's like one of those things you can't, you know, someone's got to hold the bag. You
sure.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was just in there, you know, I was like, you know, kind of young and naive and just ready to eager to get to work. So
yeah.
I knew them from back in the day because, you know, I knew Dow from, they used to work with Strong Arms Eddie too.
Yeah.
So, New Crack City, you know
yeah.
what I mean? So that was like one of those things. I was like, yo, you know, I was always a producer guy, you
right.
know what I'm saying? So I knew that if I was next to the best producers, I would be next to the best rappers and the best artists. So, you know, that was kind of like my reasoning for it. And you know, I was just eager to get to work. You know, I just wanted to be able to bring something in the building and contribute and, you know, like I told you, I brought a PA mentality to everything I did in music.
Totally. Hey guys, we just want to take a second to interrupt this conversation with Brocky Marciano to tell you about the good people over at Talkspace.com who help you take better care of yourself from the comforts of your home, from your workspace. You don't even have to go to one of those operations out there who charge you $1 million for like 45 minutes to talk about what's going on with you.
Right. Instead of talking to Carol at your job, Carol who is full of bad ideas, you can talk to a licensed therapist that you pick based on your preferences for as little as $32 a week. You can send your therapist text, audio, and video messages, or even do a live video chat. Talkspace therapists are fully licensed and go through a rigorous screening process so you're not talking to a bozo.
Yeah, listen, mental health is a serious thing and everybody can use this and honestly, everybody can afford this. The good people over at Talkspace.com have a deal for you. And Jeff, where can they go?
You can go to Talkspace.com/WOT. And as a special offer for all of our listeners, you can use the coupon code COUPON, COUPON, to get $30 off your first month and show your support for this podcast. That's coupon at Talkspace.com/WOT.
Guys, take care of yourselves. Go to Talkspace.com/WOT. Before we get back into this episode, we just want to remind you guys, our album Teddy Bear Fresh, featuring Currency, Smoke Dizza, Bun B, Michael Christmas, Tunji Ige, Angie Martinez, Just Blaze, and a lot more, is available where?
On Spotify, SoundCloud, and all streaming services, Apple Music. You can go and search for Teddy Bear Fresh by It's The Real. We are It's The Real. Not
yes.
a waste of time.
Also, by the way, we're selling t-shirts from our Rockefeller event, and that is available
at itsthereal.com/shop. Go get your large and extra large t-shirts today.
And now, back to Brocky Marciano. You're next to every rapper. You're next to every producer. You're in the music business without being inside the building
yes.
at this point. So what did you want to do next? Or were you like,
I kind of
want to
do everything. You
yeah.
know, like that's that like, I don't really, you know, I'm one of those type of Sagittarius, you know, I don't really know if anyone really believes in any of that shit, but I get bored pretty quickly,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's like, I'm on to the next challenge all the time. So it's like, once I feel like I've made progress and I'm like, oh shit, I'm like nowhere now. I got to go to the, it's like, you got to keep making progress. And sometimes, and as anyone can probably tell you, you know, there comes a point in time where things don't accelerate as fast as they are when you're in, you know, the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like the learning curve is quick, you know, but then it kind of, you know, levels out. So, yeah, I was just always on some like, yo, okay, if it's not this, I'm going to do that. If it's not that, I'm going to do this. Or if this is slow right now, I'm going to go figure something else out. So
yeah.
that was kind of like, you know, it's kind of the way I've navigated my whole career through this industry is just
yeah.
like, put your hands in as many places as possible, you know what I'm saying, and see what you can pick up.
And how many different things were you doing at once at that point?
I was managing producers. I was managing Evidence still. I was doing Diamond. I was Columbia. Yeah, that was like four.
And you were properly situated then, I imagine. You had your own place now?
Yeah, you know,
it wasn't,
I mean,
still the car.
No, I wasn't living in the car, you know, yeah. But I was driving a minivan for sure.
A minivan?
A minivan. Like, were I wasn't making a lot of money.
Yeah.
Dad?
No,
yeah.
I was a mom. No, yeah, it was funny because I used to actually pick up Schoolboy Q and Kendrick and those dudes in the minivan. Like,
well, okay.
We used to drive around in that minivan. Like,
how did
lot.
You, from like baseball practice?
Yeah, yeah, from, yeah, straight up.
Well, so how did you get to know those guys so well?
Well, you know, Ali used to come by Diamond a lot, you know, for J-Rock.
Yeah.
And
mixed by Ali.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, he and I, you know, I always just hooked him up. You know what I'm saying? I was never one of those. I would just always, you know, just hook people up when it was genuine.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually officially met at, well, Kendrick had a show with Dom Kennedy. Kendrick opened up for Dom Kennedy downtown, like, in 2009.
That's so L.A.
Yeah, that's, like when Pussy and Patron came out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, then South by Southwest 2010. That was like our first, like, we kicked it, you know what I'm saying? So we were at the Scoremore house and we were sitting outside smoking. Ali and Q and them roll up and Ali and I keep looking at each other like like, I know you, like, you know, and like we just keep looking at each other, and then like both, like, he was like, Brock, and I was like, yeah, what's good? And he's like, yo, it's Ali. And I was like, oh shit, word. About 3 weeks prior, Shipes and I were listening to Schoolboy Q's projects, and I was just like, this is the hardest shit situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? His first project, Setback,
yeah.
Setback,
yeah,
Setback,
yeah,
Setback.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, yo, this dude is the hardest dude ever. Like, I was like, his shit, this album's incredible. So Q and I actually, he was sitting to the left of me outside, and I had a bunch of weed in Backwoods.
Yeah.
And they fucking hated Backwoods at the time. Nobody liked Backwoods at that time. Like,
listen, when you sit down at the table, you make the situation,
yeah,
better.
So, yeah. So, you know, yeah, like, we were all just sitting there smoking, you know, we're rolling up, we're talking. Kendrick comes by. Obviously, Kendrick doesn't smoke.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like, that was the, I guess the you know,
impetus, the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
But what do you see with these guys besides Q?
You know, I loved Kendrick's music, you know what I'm saying? Like, and like, again, like, that's, you know, he's, I mean, for obvious reasons, he's fucking incredible. But you know, they were just cool. Like, we were just cool. That was the other thing. Like, Q is cool. Like, you know, he and I, you know, it's funny, like, as far different from backgrounds as we come, like, we're really similar in a lot of ways, you know? So it was just one of those things. It was you know, a natural thing, you know what I'm saying? And obviously weed is a great common denominator for anybody that smokes.
Yeah.
And we were all broke at the time, you know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. It wasn't like anyone had anything. Like, we were all broke. Like, I was driving a minivan.
Yeah.
I remember I came back from the next South by Southwest, and my minivan was parked in front of my house when I left. And when I got back, it wasn't anymore.
Oh.
And that literally was the end of that minivan. I'll let that one stay in the pound, too.
Oh, my God.
Is your minivan the one that is on?
No. Kendrick had a minivan at the time, too. He was driving his mom's minivan. Yeah, so, you know, it just, my relationship with them kind of developed pretty quickly, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, Dave and them, you know, I started going by the house after that, giving him beats. And Q and I really were the ones that first started working.
Mm-hmm.
I would pick him up and go to the studio, and he worked by himself. So, you know, he, like, for some reason, he would just let me come. Probably because I had weed all the time. I would come up there with mad weed. I had mad beats. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? And, yeah, we just started working. And I gave him, you know, the first thing I ever gave him was Hands on a Wheel.
Oh, so yeah. Like, you know, just a song nobody knows now.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
But no, I mean, so that song gets immediate radio play pretty much.
Yeah, it turned into a big record, you know?
Yeah.
So, that was kind of that, like, that ultimately was like the reason, the first thing that happened that we started working together. That's, you know, that's that. And the rest is history. No.
How quickly, I guess that's a sort of good indicator, but how quickly did you develop this sort of like way to approach things with artists?
Well, you know, I think I've always, you know, I'm a pretty chill dude, so, you know, and I'm not one of those, and if anyone that knows me will tell you, like, I'm not a person that steps on toes or really bothers people, you know, and I think that sometimes that can be, you know, a good thing, and sometimes that can also be a hindrance because sometimes you can be too cool and not chase things hard enough, and someone else will outrun you. You know what I mean? But you know, in my situations, it usually works out for the better. And I just, you know, I've got a good way with people.
Yeah.
And
because that's such a difficult like thing
honest.
To balance.
I'm honest. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not a dick writer. You know what I'm saying? And I understand both sides. Like, I'm not going to push someone else's agenda so hard that, you know, I make people feel uncomfortable or my own. You know what I mean? So if there's a way we can have conversation, we can usually get to a point of progress. So it's just being about having able to have those conversations and, you know, like give and take, know when to push and know when not to. And, you know, we all develop like a really good relationship, and, you know, I have a pretty good ear for beats. So it's not like I was coming there playing whack shit. So, you know, I developed a really quick relationship with Soul, with K-Dot, with Q. The first Kendrick song we ever did together was Black Boy Fly. We were at Prohibit. In the Lower East Side.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I knew they were coming by because they were shooting the Rigor Mortis video. And I had this beat that I knew Kendrick was going to take. You know what I'm saying? And
because it was just so Kendrick.
It was just too, so fire. You know what I'm saying? And I was just like, yeah. I mean, it was like, it was a little different from something that he had done before, but it was like a progression to me, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was like, this, like, I got to get this guy on this record. So knowing that he was coming in, I started playing a record prior. And I just kept playing it until they walked in. And he walked in and literally was like, yo, what's that? And I was like, that's for you. And he was like, oh, tight. We're going to be at the studio later. Pull up. So that happened, you know. And that was like the start of our journey making music together.
Wow.
Yeah.
So being, you know, from this baseball background, how do you fit in with the TDE, you know, well, team?
I mean, you know, they're not in, you know, they're pretty self-sufficient, you know, and they don't, you know, they don't really reach out to a lot of people.
Yeah, I've seen the TDE studio rules.
Well, not only that, but it's just like, you know, you gotta, there's definitely a hazing process that you gotta get through, you know, and for new artists that are signed to TDE and everything, like, there's a hazing process, you know, and it's just because they're such a tight-knit group.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, it's just, if you want something, you got to just stick around. You got to be able to take jokes. You got to be able to, you know, shoot them back. You know, it's just one of those things. Like, you got to act like you know, and you got to just belong. So it was just one of those things. Like, I just, you know, we're all friends. You know what I'm saying? So that makes it easier. And, you know, we all kind of had the same goals in mind. So,
but while that was cool, that's not where you stayed.
No. Again, like I didn't, you know, it wasn't like a walk in the park. You know, I wasn't like over there like, oh, now we're in the money. You know? Yeah. No, that wasn't it, you know? So it's just, you know, persistence.
Yeah. So after that, did you work with Wale after that?
Yeah. Well, I moved to New York to take, I quit Diamond, to take a job at Echo. Well, it wasn't at Echo, but it was the dude, Seth, who owned Echo, and, you know, Shipes was over there doing some stuff. And
yo, Shipes was doing so much in that building.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
They were playing paintball in the office.
Yeah, yeah. Shipes is a fucking legend.
Yeah.
One of my best friends in life.
Oh, like. And we talked about this when we had Shipes on the podcast, and maybe with Ev Boogie, too, like when we had him on the podcast. Uh-huh. But we've known Shipes for 10 years, and obviously we know all the Complex people who operated out of that 23rd Street space, which was, as you may know, where they shot the interiors and exteriors for Big.
Yes.
For the toy company, right? Yeah. So Shipes invites us over to his new spot, and he's like, yeah, same spot. But we went in a different entrance. We went in like the 24th Street entrance or something like that, and we go up to the floor, and it looks exactly like Complex did, but
there's nothing
out
in there,
right? No one there.
Like, Vashti had like thrown up tags like everywhere. Like, it looked like an apocalyptic version of Complex.
Well, because they were moving out.
Well, like, we were so confused because,
well, or were they? I mean,
no, like, they still own the build. They own the building or whatever. But yeah, like obviously Complex moved.
Yeah.
And Echo was moving as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of like the last hurrah for the 23rd Street office. Yeah. It was like, you know, Shives is like, fuck it, man. Yeah. This is cinematic offices now, don't you?
Eric and I walked in there, and we saw, so it's like an empty office, and we walked over to a cubicle where Scheist Bubs of Purple
Legend.
City Bird Gang was sitting in a cubicle working on a spreadsheet. Yeah. And I was just like, this is not how I thought I would meet Scheist Bubs.
Word. You know what I'm saying? It's a very intelligent human being right
now. Company man.
My man knows his way around Excel.
Yeah.
So you're involved over there now.
Yeah. So I moved to New York, you know, something I always wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, I walked into that building, like, thought my life was going to change for the better. And that shit fucking sucked.
Really?
Let me tell you that much. Nah, you know, it was just, I was sold a dream, you know what I'm saying? And part of it was probably because I wanted it to be the dream, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, to no fault of anybody's, you know, I got a great deal. I got paid, you know what I'm saying? And I got to move to New York. And I think that definitely helped my career a lot and my life, like, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of my greatest friends live in New York.
Yeah. Were you taking the subway?
Yeah. Actually, this girl, a friend of mine, I was always here on Diamond Business. You know, Diamond was doing really well at the time, so I was expensing everything. So I was just taking cabs. You know what I'm saying? And she's like, bro, like, if you don't learn how to take the subway, you're going to be broke. Right? So I'm like, yeah, whatever. About a month afterwards, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, yo, this is crazy, bro. I'm spending $40 a day just to get to places. Like, what the fuck is this? You know? So, yeah, I quickly learned the subway. I love the subway now.
Yep.
I don't even like taking cabs anymore.
Right.
You're a changed man.
Yeah.
You're so humble now.
Yeah. I'm no longer bad and bougie.
So that situation wasn't perfect.
Nah, it wasn't. Yeah, exactly. You know, it was very corporate, and I was coming from, you know, a skateboard company. You know what I mean? Let's just keep it real.
Like, yeah.
We were rogue, and we didn't have a bunch of success before, so everything we were doing was, you know, first time. It was great. You know what I'm saying? It was exciting. And then you go to this company that, you know, it was long established, and now they're fledgling, and they're trying to figure out some other shit. And it was like some culture vulture shit.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that I was the fucking guy who was trying to sell this shit to other people. And I'm like, yo, that ain't me.
Right.
Like, you're not about to have me, you know, you're trying to buy up all these companies. Like, nah, this is crazy. Like, these are my friends.
Yeah.
You know, I'm selling them down the river at this point. Like, and I was not about to do that. So that shit ended quickly. You know what I mean? And then I went to Atlantic. And, My consultancy with Columbia was over. Mike Caron, you know, super great dude.
He finally returned your email.
He returned an email. I was managing Dahi and everybody at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, my stock was kind of going up with the producer side.
Yeah.
I had a meeting with him, and he was like, go meet with Craig Kalman. I meet with Craig Kalman.
You said it fine. You know, whatever.
Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah,
fine. I was like, okay.
Meet with Craig Kalman.
Yeah. So I go meet with Craig Kalman, and he offers me a job that day.
That's dope.
That was dope. You know what I'm saying? It was super dope. You know, Craig is a super smart guy, amazing, encyclopedic level music knowledge.
Legendary ear,
producer, record collector.
Yeah.
And, you know, Atlantic is, you know, is one of the greatest labels ever. So, you know, I'm coming from Columbia, which, you know, ultimately I think Columbia, you know, aside from rap music, you know, hip hop, Columbia is, you know, the greatest label ever.
Mm-hmm.
But Atlantic, you know, they had artists that, you know, and I'm at a Turge, and they have some of the best executives ever in the game.
Yeah.
So I was excited, you know, and they had a good roster at the time, and it was nice to go where, you know, they cared about music and they cared about urban music and whatnot. So I felt like, you know, it was a good place for me to be.
And you had relationships already with Wiz.
Yeah, I had relationships with everybody in there. You know, Currency was mm-hmm. there.
Yeah.
You know, Drama was there. Steve O'Carolus.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of people that I really like in the music industry as A&Rs, Riggs. So, yeah, it was dope. Like, you know, a lot of familiar faces. And I just was, you know, I was eager. It was still, like, you know, kind of young in the game in terms of, like, being an A&R.
And what projects were you then working on?
Well, I was like, I came in as a consultant, and so technically I didn't have any projects at the time because mm-hmm. I hadn't signed anything yet.
But you had an ID.
Yeah, no, I didn't even have an ID. You know, because I was technically, like, again, as a consultant, you don't really get an ID.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I still had to, like, get a badge every time I went up there.
Yeah. Could have been, like, your report cards. You could just made
know,
up an
so
ID. No,
it was cool because I got to take the picture every time, you know, so I'd be, like, another dumb face, you know, like, and, yeah, so I was up there for a few months, and, you know, I would just kind of help get producers in with people and, you know, give ideas and whatnot. And Wale hits me up, I want to say, like, November of 2013. Yeah, no, I mean, I actually had got I quit the job here, and I had gone back to help Casey Veggies work on his first project. Mm-hmm. Sylvia had, you know, allowed me to do that. And I really wanted something to get into, and Wale calls me randomly, and, you know, he's like, yo, you know, he's like, I'm thinking about, you know, he's like, I got this new project I'm going to do, you know, I want to do the album About Nothing, and, you know, I think you should A&R it, you know, and I was like, fuck yeah.
And did you know him from...
We knew each other from Diamond.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, like, you know, I'd given him a bunch of beats before, and, yeah, so he, you know, he gave me my first project, you know, like, major label project. And we, you know, we dove into that, and, you know, it was a crazy ride, that one.
How long are you spending in the studio with him?
Shit, I'm in the studio every day. I'm a studio rat, so I'm in the studio every day from, like...
Because he is, too.
Yeah, from, like, 1 p.m. to, like, you know, 4 or 5 a.m. That's just how I do it, yeah. So, yeah.
How quickly did that project come together?
You know, it didn't... I was going to... When we started... It came out in 2015, I know you guys were at the at the diner
up here.
Was amazing, right?
Which was the greatest thing, because usually all the listening parties are like way far away.
So you're like, wait a minute, we can walk to a listening party. Holy shit, this is crazy.
Like walking up, we were already like, this is the best event ever.
No, so the album took about 2 years.
Did you meet Jerry?
Yeah.
Oh, well, no, Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah. A couple times.
What was that like?
I honestly, like, I have audio. I have like 4 hours of audio from the mic'd up conversations we had, and I listened to it.
Oh, wasn't just like takes of him just doing
No. This was like we literally just we mic'd up conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that was like the coolest thing, like, you know, being able to talk to Jerry Seinfeld. I remember when he had just bought the Porsche 918, and he was telling us about it. I was just like, this motherfucker has a $1 million Porsche. Just casually talking about it. And it goes from 0 to 60 in like 0.8 seconds.
You're like, I had a minivan, you know, but it doesn't matter. Yeah.
You know, the coolest thing about Jerry is like, Jerry just has all the life lessons. Like, he's the fucking wisest man, you know what I'm saying, that you could talk to probably ever. Like, he just, you know, he's like a sage. So that was, I mean, to me, that was like, yo, like, that's a bucket list thing right there. Like,
yeah.
Sit in a studio multiple times with Jerry Seinfeld, have conversations. So that was tight, man.
Was that always the plan?
You know, I think it was always what Wale wanted. And, it, you know, like, everybody did a great job of corralling it and making it happen, you know. And they actually have a really cool relationship. So that made it easy.
Girls on Drugs was on that project?
Yes.
How did that come together?
You know, Wale is always like, wants to put out music. He wants to put out music all the time. So we got to a point in the album like where we kind of hit a stalemate in terms of like it being ready to go and finished. And so he's like, no. He's like, I always do a tape right before my album. And I was dead ass set against it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, yo, it's too much. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's, you know. And he's like, no, we're doing this stuff. We know, fine. I was like, fuck it, let's go. So we're all in the studio in New York, you know, literally like 48 hours, you know, making all these records, you know what I'm saying? And like taking pieces of records that we already had and finishing them. And, you know, like we're, you know, literally up against the clock on that one. Like, because he put out a date and a time and all this type of shit. And we're like, oh, fuck. So we're in the studio for like 3 days in a row. A-Track came and we're telling him what's going on. And he's like, well, yeah, give me the songs and I'll do it. I'm like, they're not quite done yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, but we're going to... He's like, well, there's not really much I can do. He said, call me in a couple days when it's done. So, like, we're sending shit as we finish it and mix it and master it. Fake master and send it back to A-Track to put it all together.
Oh,
and like,
God.
You know, I think we were, like, a few hours late on the delivery of that. But mm-hmm. it ended up working out well. And Girls on Drugs was the song that... It had a Janet Jackson Go Deep sample. So it was like, we were like, we're never getting this clear.
Yeah, like, no chance.
So we put it out, you know what I'm saying? We put it out there, the thing, and it got such a good response that
she had to say us?
No. Well, you know, I don't want to delve into the business aspect of it, but it was not easy. Let's put it that way.
Gotcha.
Yeah, she wouldn't clear it with any cuss words.
Wow.
So we had to literally, after the dirty version was out, we had to re-clean it up for the album.
Man.
Whoa.
Which is kind of a weird thing, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Things you do for a great song.
Yeah,
you know?
You know what I mean?
Or for Janet Jackson.
Well, that too, yeah.
Word.
So where
Miss Jackson, if you're next.
Yeah. Well, I'm not.
So
Janet. Yeah.
So where does the success of that project take you next? Def Jam?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to be more heavily involved in things, you know. you know, record labels have this weird thing about managing and working and all that type of stuff. So I always thought it was best that I stayed outside, just outside of the 3-point line.
Yeah,
you know
sure.
what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So hip hop, one of my mentors, best friends, mm-hmm. Fucking amazing everything.
Yeah.
He's like, yo, thinking about like going over to Def Jam.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, word, I've always wanted to work for Def Jam. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the mecca of hip-hop labels, you know?
And he's like, it's a little bit presumptuous that you would think that you can now work for me.
Nah, yeah,
he's
yeah,
like, I mean, got the job, nah, but you didn't get the job.
Nah, but it was like one of those things. I was like, it's always a team thing. You know what I'm saying? It's always like, you know, everybody has their guys. You know, if that's one thing you learn about the music industry is everybody's got their guys.
Yeah, same with Ocean's 11.
Yeah. Yeah, so... Exactly. So
are you the safe guy or the getaway driver
or the grease monkey?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think who I am in that situation. I think I was like Scott Kahn.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Scott Kahn and Casey.
Yeah,
you know what
Casey
I mean?
Affleck.
Yeah, just like maybe combined. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Fighting outside the
yeah,
like,
exactly. So you know, that around that time I started, you know, developing a pretty good relationship with No ID via hanging out with hip hop, and you know, I was back in LA and No ID said something funny to me once. It was funny. It was actually about me and Sycamore. He was like, you know what's funny about you and Sycamore? And I'm like, he's like, you know, he said, you know what your problem is? You guys, he said, you know what you guys' problem is?
And like, I was I don't have a college degree.
I was like, no, I was like, yeah, well, that's one of them. I was like, what? And he was like, you guys care too much, man. You know what I'm saying? Like,
damn.
You know, and I never really understood what that meant till a little later on, you know, but, you know, I feel like.
What did he mean?
It's like some things are. They just are. You know what I'm saying? And no matter how much you care for it, you can't change it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And again, I think, you know, that's like a passionate thing for us. And again, like part of naivete and inexperience is that you always think you can change everything, you know, no matter what it is, you know? And he wasn't saying that like as a bad thing. He was just saying that like, you know, as somebody elder and wiser and has been through the ringer a bunch of times, he's just like, oh, wait till you get to that point.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I sort of just want him to say that to Jerry Seinfeld, who has like problems with everything.
Yeah. So, you know, and No ID, ultra intelligent, super talented. Like, you know, I don't even know if people understand how smart that guy is.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, he and I hit it off, and you know, he believed in me enough to hire me over there, and you know, it was dope. Like I was in the, you know, I'm in Def Jam, like
yeah.
It was tight. You know, we had a great team of A&Rs, Noah, 2-0, Steve-O, mm-hmm. Mike, Chavez,
Sycamore.
Well, Sycamore had just left.
Okay, gotcha.
I actually never was at Def Jam while Sycamore was there.
He cares too much.
Yeah, he cares too much. He cared just enough to dip.
Yeah.
You know, he had gotten a great situation at Epic,
right?
You know what I mean? And which he deserved.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that was, you know, that was part of the journey. That was, you know, I was like, okay, I get to work with No ID. This is great. You know, he developed a great relationship with all my producers and Dahi and you know, he's an empowering person. You know what I'm saying? He empowers his people, and that's like a dope. You know, I hadn't really fully had that yet, you know, in my career, in terms of like, you know, I was always kind of on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of nice to have somebody like, you know, just help you, you know what I'm saying, through things, and, you know, someone you can talk to and give you advice and whatnot. And that was, you know, and obviously just to be around and witness how he works and see what he does is, you know, it's, I've been fucking blessed, man, like to have the hip hops and the No IDs and the Chases and, you know, to me, which I think are, you know, some of the smartest people I've ever encountered, to be able to like somehow have faith in this dude from Santa Barbara. You know what I'm saying? Like,
who doesn't fuck with avocados.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, so yeah, it was to me, it was surreal.
Yeah.
You know, and that was fire.
Eric and I have we just did the Rockefeller reunion podcast or celebration
I haven't heard
podcast.
Of it.
No, yeah, well,
it, yeah, no,
it I don't think you got. I don't know.
Did
you guys tweet about it or anything?
A couple times,
maybe.
Yeah, every single mention of it. But
did anyone show up?
Well, you know, sold it out. Light 600. Yeah, it's fine.
Whatever. It's whatever. Light work.
Yeah. It's fine, guys. But so you know, hip hop.
It's available on SoundCloud right now. Yeah. Yeah.
But whatever. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Fine. Video coming soon.
Is there a yeah?
T-shirts
for
sale.
Is there a link?
We're gonna hologram it very soon. So yeah. Yeah.
But. You know, hip hop showed up. Hip hop, we've seen in very weird places. Among them, like,
I mean, yo, hip hop showed up. That's,
yeah, hip hop showed up, which is crazy.
That's a
he's a unicorn. Yeah. But where's the craziest place that you've seen hip hop?
On a boat in Hawaii.
Yeah, that's a good one though.
At my house, you know what I'm saying? Like,
no, actually,
like, he stays like, you know, like he stays with me all the time.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
So it's like. Yeah, it's funny. Like, it's a funny. Like, I remember when, fast forward, and like, we were at my house when the Goosebumps verse came in from Kendrick. Kendrick text me the Goosebumps verse. It's like 6 a.m. We had just got back from Hawaii.
Yeah.
I wake up and I just FaceTime Travis, like, it. Cause I'm figuring, like, it's, I'm on Hawaii time, so I'm like 3 hours behind. I'm all the way off. And yeah, I wake up. It's like 6 a.m. I like looking at my thing. I get text from Kendrick, and he sends me the verse back. And I FaceTime Travis. Like, it was my first instinct. I was like barely awake, and he was like wide awake, like at 6 a.m. I said, "Yo, T," I said, we got the verse back. And he's like, "What?" He said, "Send me your address. I'm coming over there right now." I don't know if you know, I live in Manhattan Beach. It's like an hour drive from Hollywood. So, you know, next thing you know, you just a caravan of fucking G wagons pull up, and it's me, Hip Hop, and Mick. Moreno, who is, you know, Pharrell's right hand for a long time.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there, and Travis walks in, and, like, you know, we start rolling up and just played a verse, and, you know, everyone went like batshit crazy. And
at like 7 o'clock in the morning.
7 o'clock in the morning in Manhattan Beach, bro. I'm sure our neighbors are thrilled.
The weirdest circumstance that we had, I think, with hip hop, and we, again, Jeff said, like, we've hung out with him in lots of different places. Yeah. He came over here on New Year's Eve. Just to hang out for, we thought, a little while. Ended up being 5.5 hours of just, like, hanging. And it was the best time ever.
I mean, you know, if you, again, if you have questions and you have common interests, like, you, that's a 20-hour day.
Totally.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like,
totally.
Dead ass. Like, the guy
I
just.
I feel like you just sunned us.
No, I didn't. You know, maybe in my own little way.
Only five and a half hours,
huh?
These things sort of, like. You know, the world works in funny ways. You end up getting that job at Interscope to work with TDE.
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, yeah, it happened from a few different angles. But yeah, ultimately it was, you know, I obviously want to do my own thing too. You know, I want to go sign stuff and be successful in, you know, finding the next new shit, you know. But yeah, like that was definitely a big part of my move.
Yeah.
You know, we had never officially done anything together. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, which is also difficult. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, everyone knows you for this, but you're not actually part of it. And, so it becomes weird when you're trying to leverage business, you know, in certain ways, you know? So yeah, that was, you know, it was, to me, that was like a dream come true. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was like. It's kind of like, you know, you start your career with the Yankees and then, you know, you go back and play for the Yankees and retire your jersey. They're like, that's kind of, you know, what I'm hoping to, you know, to
achieve. Or it was like you're just friends with, like, Jeter and
that,
and
actually, that's even better. That's
and
even better.
Now you're actually, like,
working. Then all of a sudden,
yeah, then you're a pitcher. So I guess the question is, do they all look at you now as a suit?
No, not at all. Like, I think anyone that knows me knows that that's the furthest thing from, you know, my...
Well, you should start showing up in a suit.
I was thinking more of a tuxedo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So,
I do quite fancy tuxedos.
What can you say about Joey IE and Aaron Bashuk and actually finally working with Sycamore over there?
Yeah, no, I mean, they got a great staff, man. Like, everybody over there is, you know, obviously, you know, has done a lot of shit, you know, and has been responsible for a lot of things. And
do they make you watch the Defiant ones?
Yeah, that was actually a prerequisite.
Yeah,
in,
that's
in
the
contract.
Hazing process over at Interscope.
It was like, okay, you have to watch this for 37 hours straight. No, I mean that there, you know, again, Interscope is such a, you know, legendary, you know, company, really forward thinking, you know, obviously the Defiant One's name kind of, you know, says it all, but, you know, it's like they're, that's risk taking over there. You know what I'm saying? And I think everyone over there is fits well, you know what I mean? And I appreciate the ability to work alongside everybody. And, that's enough of my politically correct answers.
Yeah. You're not getting fired.
Yeah. When did you first hear Kendrick name drop you? And did you know that you were going to be in the video?
I was in the studio when he did the shit. So it was like, that was what we were doing every day. You know what I'm saying? Like, we get up, we work out, I go to Four Daughters, and we go to the studio. So, yeah, I mean, it was pretty funny. Like, you know, I was just kind of like, oh, here we go. You know what I mean? And yeah, so that was tight. It's awkward and tight at the same time.
You're a genius annotation.
Yeah. It was funny because Rob texted me the night the album dropped, and I'm like, no, Rob, you're not about to get me to talk about nothing, right? You know what I mean? Like, starting to get the text like, oh, what does this mean? And what does that mean? And I'm like, yo, like, I don't know if you know TDE, but you know, you let them answer. You know what I mean? Right. Like, so I just told him, I said, yes, that's my name. And the name of the place is Four Daughters. Yeah, that's
yeah,
all.
Yeah,
and that's where I left it.
How many takes did it take to get the video done for you?
I mean, you know, I had a very extensive role in that.
Yeah,
video,
I mean, so
that shit was like 20 minutes. We literally sat down and ate breakfast, and they filmed while we were eating breakfast.
So it was
there was no music involved. Like yeah, it was not yeah. even a like there wasn't even a it wasn't even proper.
Got
like,
a close up, and you gotta watch that. Yeah.
Was it prop food?
No. It was real food. I had a mouthful of eggs and spinach and mushrooms. Egg white, spinach and mushrooms with avocado, you know.
Actually, that might be the most LA thing you've said on the podcast.
Yeah, word. Yeah.
So now you have to get your
SAG after card?
No. Not, yeah. I was going to say, like, you know.
No, I was non-union.
Interscope actually, like, you know, takes taxes out of your checks and everything.
Yes, they do.
So is that a lot easier to explain to your family and your extended family now what you do for a living?
You know, the funniest thing is like, yeah, I think, you know, they all, my family is weird. Like, it's kind of big because I have a lot of, like, step-parent. I have a stepmom and her family and, you know, my mom and her side and my dad, you know, so no one ever knew what I did. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're just like, oh, Brock, you're just running around celebrities and all this type of shit. You know?
By the way, not wrong.
Right, yeah, you're like, yeah. Yeah.
Right, but they're like, what do you do? You know what I'm saying? And they still don't know what I do, but the fact that they could affix, like, a vice president of a record label they know of or whatever, you know, they just look at it like, oh, okay. Like, he's not a... They all thought I was going to be, like, a piece of shit growing up. Like, they were like, I was always like the California kid that came to Texas, and it was like, all of a sudden I leave or we go to the mall and their kids come back with baggy pants and, you know, shit like that. So I was kind of like, my brother and I were looked at as like kind of like troublemakers, for, you know, or we stood out like a sore thumb, like, you know. And everybody else is like college degree, you know, lawyer, agents, you know, they work at ad agencies. One of my cousins is like a genius and he does like science for a living, you know. And so, yeah, I was always kind of like the black sheep of the family in that regard, like from a professional standpoint. And now I'm fully vindicated.
Yeah, you've gone from
I make more money than all those motherfuckers, goddamn it. You know what I mean? No, I'm just joking. It's cool, and it actually feels, you know, it's different to be kind of like, now it's like, oh, my mom's friends like ask about, like, oh, does he know this guy, or, you know, do you know Pharrell, or have you ever talked to Kanye, or
have you met Pharrell?
Yes.
Okay, have you met Kanye?
Yes.
Okay,
has Travis ever come over to your house at 7 a.m. and you're like,
actually, you know. So yeah, it's somewhat vindicating in that regard. But, you know, again, it's like, we all, you know, jobs are jobs, and, you know, everyone has responsibilities, and, you know, I don't care if you love your job more than anyone else in the world, you know, you're still going to have days where you're just like, you know, like, you still have to do things that you don't want to do, you know, and that's part of it. And I'm just lucky to be able to be doing something I love, to where I've never woken up in the last 15 years and dreaded what I have to do. You know what I'm saying? So in that regard, like, I've won, you know, I've won.
I want to know, what's your best Cardo Got Wings story? Because my favorite Cardo Got Wings story, because we've never actually met, but I go on his Instagram live thing, and I keep saying that I've heard rumors that he's 4'11".
No, he's not 4'11". You know, him and I have a great relationship. You know, it's, we've been rocking together for like, shit, like 8 years. Wow. 7, 8 years, you know, so.
And he's still 4'11".
he's all of 4'11".
Do you have a favorite Cardo beat?
Shit, dude.
Mine might be Mesmerized.
Mesmerized by Wiz. Is fire.
It's great.
I think.
Or do you hate all?
No,
of
no,
them?
No. You know what my favorite Cardo beat is? J Rock. It is the Black Hippie record. The shit. What is the name of that record?
You can just sing it. It's fine.
Yeah, you would like that, wouldn't you? Nah, it's the one on J Rock last project with Kendrick and Vice City. That beat is crazy.
Yeah.
Tell us about Big Lebowski.
What do you want to know?
How does it end?
I've always loved that movie.
Same.
You know what I'm saying?
It's Eric's favorite movie.
It is. It's fucking amazing. And it's one of those movies, like, no matter how many times you see it, you take something else away from it every time you watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like one of those movies, like, whenever it's on, you just always watch it. Like, you're just like, oh, okay, even if it's in the middle, whether it's fucking, you know, three quarters of the way over, you're going to watch it. And I think, you know, me being a overthinker, you know what I'm saying, as somebody who, you know, just very cerebral at times, I think, like, that is, like, what I always kind of wished I could just not give a fuck. Going back to, like, you care a lot, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he just doesn't give a flying fuck, and it's fine, you know what I'm saying? And I kind of have adopted that a little bit because, you know, being a manager and always, you know, being an A&R, they're accommodating positions. So, you know, you're around all these people, you have to accommodate at all times. You have to drop your life at the moment. At the drop of a dime, in order to go make something happen, as soon as they feel like they're ready to make something happen, there's like, you know, the entertainment business is hurry up and wait.
Yeah,
I always kind of admired his, you know, view of things, you know. Mm-hmm. And one day I was just like, you know what, this is it. That's me. Because I'm always like, you know, I'm attentive, but you know, on my own time, like I can. You know, I lazily make things happen. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And
that should be your business card.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like I try to make it look effortless or just kind of just do things as opposed to like overthinking and running around like a maniac and just kind of running around in circles. It's like, oh, no, you just kind of all walk in a straight line very slowly.
Yeah.
You're going to get there at the same
Listen,
time.
Listen, if there's two things you really live by, it's that you make the table better and that the rug really ties the room together.
The rug
right?
ties the room together. Bro.
Thank you so much for
nah,
coming
man.
Through. And when we go to the West Coast, we're going to get this Cardo episode done.
Oh, yeah, we're
Because,
good.
You know.
Cardo's got a lot to say.
No, believe me, I know.
He's got a lot to say, so.
But
I hope you guys got some time.
Oh, listen. But honestly, congratulations on making it from living in your car to a no vacancy. Right?
Word,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
This is pretty dope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real Jeff. If people want to find out more about us, if people want to find out more about our music or our podcast or our live events, where can they go?
You can always go to itsthereal.com for any and all It's the Real needs. You can always go to soundcloud.com/awasteoftime to get all of our old episodes. You can also go to iTunes and search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. We are It's the Real. You can go to Spotify and SoundCloud and any streaming service, including Google Play, especially Google Play.
Good title.
To listen to our album, Teddy Bear Fresh. You can also go to Twitter at It's The Real, Facebook at It's The Real, Instagram at It's The Real. We are also on Snapchat at It's The Real and It's The Real Eric because It's The Real was taken.
And where else can people find us, Jeff?
You can always find us at the bowling alley because we are now there every Saturday morning for an all-you-can-bowl special, $20.
Oh, my God.
It is the most worth it deal I've ever come across.
That
we bowled for like 5 games before noon.
Oh, at least.
I mean, and it was dope.
Yeah, I think we left our souls on the lanes. And,
yeah.
Shout out to everybody who was already there and who is above 60 years old.
It's sort of like the DMV where you just see these people that you don't think exist anywhere else.
Yep.
Like you'll be like, oh, like that man is wearing like, you know, a cardboard shirt or something.
Yeah. And you know what? bowls like five strikes in a row. So shout out to everybody who was there.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see you Saturday mornings, 8 o'clock, right on the dot.
Guys, this podcast does not grow without people telling people to tell people to listen to our podcast. I want to shout out a kid I have not seen since maybe middle school,
okay,
or high school. He reached out. He said he was very excited for the Rockefeller podcast that we put together.
That's awesome.
And he said he was going to buy a t-shirt. Shout out to Alex Correa.
All right.
I don't know where he's living right now. I heard maybe L.A.
Okay.
Or Chile. I'm not sure.
One or the other.
It's one or the other.
Hey, Alex, go spread the word. Jeff, I would also like to shout out a guy named Alex, our friend, the bald god,
wow.
Alex Chichamaro.
Yeah.
Alex, who has done amazing things in such a short time in the record business. If you guys don't follow the Bald God on Twitter, you really should. He is full of gems and lots of business expertise. He's a great dude, and he is on the up and up. Shout out to the Bald God. Spread the word, guys. Let people know about this podcast. Let people know about It's the Real. Let people know where we're bowling on Saturday mornings out there in Queens. Now for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
We will see you guys next week.